Hey guys, thanks for tuning us in for this 70th episode of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. Special guests on this episode include the music director and guitarist from Trans-Siberian Orchestra. We'll also visit with country duo Royal South. Country singer and songwriter Tay Bronson will be a guest, along with comedian and actor Michael Colyar, and we'll wrap up the show with Red Dirt artist Kenfo. If you would, please take the time to subscribe, drop a like, comment, leave some feedback, and share with your friends. Our first guest is the musical director and guitarist for Trans-Siberian Orchestra, going to talk about a special live stream event available this Friday. Christmas time TSO is top of the list. Excited to visit with music director and guitarist Al Petrelli this morning from Trans-Siberian Orchestra. And Al, first off, thanks so much for taking the time.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. And how's everything going down that way?
It's going, I think, about like it is anywhere else, Al.
Yeah, kind of like a loaded question, dude. Well, wish everybody down there, you know, all my best. I got a special place in my heart for your city. First time I came down there was like 30 years ago. I played at a place called the Samurai Bar and Grill. A long time ago.
That's awesome. Now TSO, the Christmas and the holiday season, I mean, are huge for you guys. So for 2020, obviously everybody's having to change things up. And Al, I'm excited about this special event that you guys have coming up.
I'm excited too. I'm also a little terrified. This is a first for us, you know. I mean, God, excuse me, but. Listen, for 26 years now since I recorded the first notes of this with Paul O'Neill, our founder, you know, everything's been, he had this, he used to say, you adapt, you overcome, you improvise, and you figure out a way to do whatever you need to do. And, you know, for the entirety of, you know, the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, it's always been that. I mean, from the first record to the first tour to the first time we cut up into two shows and two bands, so... This is nothing new for us. We just kind of figure out a way to do something. But this is some uncharted territory, especially for me.
And dealing with technology, how much have you had to learn in 2020 to prepare yourself for the live stream?
Oh, not a thing. I'm not learning anything, though, I promise. Dude, I got my hands full just playing guitar, running the band, you know. But fortunately... We have, you know, some of the greatest department heads and crew chiefs. And I mean, these guys just got it going on. And what they're able to do. Listen, I've said over the years, every time we come through town, it's going to be the biggest, craziest show ever. And I don't think I've ever disappointed anybody. So I'm going to say the same thing this year, albeit differently. You know, it's going to be on everybody's TV, you know, in their living rooms. But from what I've gathered so far, what I've seen, little bits of the special effects are over the top. The production, it just looks beautiful. The band is crushing. And, of course, at the center of this whole thing, you got Paul O'Neill's story, Christmas Eve and Other Stories, which is really the star of the show.
And for you to keep the live show like or the live stream as much like the live presentation would be, I mean, how much pressure do you put on yourself each year as the new events come up?
Much the same thing every year. I mean, I've always looked at it like, you know, when you have a Super Bowl football team, you know, well, you already won the Super Bowl last year. That doesn't matter this year. Now you got to start from scratch and do it all over again, you know. So we kind of, you know, rebuild it from the ground up, make sure that it's better than it was, add some surprises. You know, there's a lot of people that I affectionately consider my repeat offenders who have been coming to see this thing for 20 years now. You know, and every year I tell them, listen, it'll be different than last year. It'll be better than last year. You know, we always want to surprise them. And for people who are going to be joining us for the first time ever, you know, just sit back, keep your pajamas on, put a log in the fireplace, pour McAllen's, do whatever it is that you want to do. Stay home and stay safe, you know, and enjoy the spectacle that is the Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
Now, Al, where did the first inspiration for TSO? I mean, where did that first originate? I mean, and how excited were you by the original feedback you guys got?
Well, Paul O'Neill called me early winter 1995 and asked me to come in and play guitar on this project he was working on. And I'd been friends with Paul for about 10 years prior to that. And I said, yeah, absolutely, dude. I'll be right there. You know, so I drove into New York City from my house. And he put the faders up, and I kind of looked at him, you know, just I had this kind of perplexed look on my face. I'm like, what's with the Christmas song? You know, And he explained the story behind it. I was like, all right, cool, whatever. Roll tape, you know. And I started playing. He goes, oh, man, that's exactly what it needed. It sounds great. And he bought me a cheeseburger for dinner, and I thought that was the end of it, you know. I mean, this is 1995. I mean, who's going to ever listen to or buy, you know, a fairly heavy, aggressive guitar version of, you know, A Christmas Carol? Well, good thing, you know, he didn't leave it in my hands, because later that year, by December of 95, it was the number one requested song in America. And it was just everywhere. Every radio station, every format was playing. It was like the most incredible thing ever. And I was fine with that. Then he said, well, I'm going to write a whole record around this one song. I'm going to call it Christmas Eve and Other Stories. I'm going to call the band the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. And I was like, all right, count me in. And again, I didn't think too much of it, because why would I, you know? And I think we sold 3 million records in 96. And by then in 99, he said, we're going to go tour. And it kept growing up and building like one of my kids, you know, from infancy to being a toddler to, you know, adolescence to now young adulthood. It has exceeded every one of my expectations. I never thought in a million years that, A, we'd be talking about, you know, going on 26 years now, and B, we'd be talking about canceling an entire tour due to this disgusting pandemic that's just, like, devastated the planet. So, you know, one minute I'm just over the top happy and proud, and the other minute I'm like, how are we going to pull this off Friday night?
And for you also, the story of TSO and the story of Christmas, I don't think there's any year where it's more appropriate or Al, even more needed than it is now.
No, I agree so much, my brother. You know, I mean, at the center of all story, excuse me, is basically about somebody missing somebody. You know, in this case, a father missing his teenage runaway daughter, who he's praying to the heavens on Christmas Eve, you know, for her safe return home. Now, what I noticed about it is everybody relates to Paul's story because everybody misses somebody, especially around the holidays. You know, there's always that empty chair at the dining room table. This year, more than ever, everybody misses everybody because we can't get together like we would normally do. You know, loved ones, friends, family, whatever it is. So I think the fact that this tour was taken away from everybody, not only the band and everybody in the organization, but the folks in the audience who have made this part of their holiday tradition, you know, for a couple of minutes, it was like, we're not going to have this year. This is horrible, you know. And now here we are, you know, albeit virtually, but we will be able to get together and join together and kind of get lost in this beautifully written story.
That's right. And again, the live stream event is going to be this Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 local time. And Al, if folks want ticket information, where's the best place to find more information?
Easiest place to go is TSOLivestream.com. All right. very simple. It's $30. And the thing is, don't stress. The downbeat happens at 8 p.m. East Coast time, like you said, 7 your time. But don't rush home from work. You know, just get home, get comfy, do your thing, and then grab your remote control. And when you're ready, press go. And you have it for 48 hours. And if I'm not mistaken, you can watch it as many times as you want that weekend. So really, just sit back, exhale. You don't got to worry about traffic, parking, bad weather, dog sitters. You know, just stay home and stay safe.
That's awesome. Well, Al, like I mentioned before we came on, a huge fan. It's a privilege to visit with you once again this morning. Best of success with the live stream, and look forward to talking again next year, my friend.
All right, my brother Lewis, and all my best to you and the family, and stay safe. And next year's our 25th anniversary, so when we come out, it's going to be guns a-blazing, trust me.
All right, guys, our next guest is Royal South, Sarah Beth and Glenn. We'll talk to them about not only their new music, the upcoming releases, and even some goals they may have for 2021. And first off, thanks for being on the show. And Sarah Beth, what was it that made it obvious to you that the pairing was something that you guys needed to get underway?
I feel like there's a lot of different things, but I feel that both of us have really different strengths. That's not just in music, but kind of in life as well. And so even throughout, we were just talking about this, but even throughout my solo career, before I was part of Royal South, we were still Royal South. Glenn was there helping me after I worked with Dean for quite a while. And then that slowly transitioned to working with Glenn. Glenn was producing the music. We were co-writing all the songs together. And so even though it was my name out front before we became Royal South, it truly was the two of us. We were playing on the road together. He was singing with me. And so it was really, you know, it wasn't just it wasn't just me. It truly was a duo, just with the name that was mine.
Which is fine by me. I just got to stand in the shadows. It's great.
There's a lot less pressure that way, isn't there, Glenn?
That's what I always say. I say that now I have less pressure because I can always just pass the buck over to him if something, you know, if I need help or if I'm, you know, if something goes wrong.
Now, you know, for the listeners that have never heard, tell us where the name came from.
So we actually came up with this. It was our friend. Okay.
It took so long.
Exactly. I should go backwards and say that we could not think of a name, but we were about to put out music. And obviously, if you're going to put out music, you need a website and you need a logo and you need a band name to like give to the people when you put out a song. And I'll never forget, everything sounded cheesy or it was taken. So we would be going to play shows. We drove to South Carolina to play some shows. And I remember the whole drive, no joke, the entire drive, all we did was go back and forth on names and be like, no, that's cheesy. Oh, that's bad. Oh, that sounds like one. We played at the Wild Horse Saloon in Nashville and we asked people, it was packed, and we said, we really need a band name. Help us name our band. And so we asked people to write on napkins what they thought our band name should be. So many people, I still have all the napkins, but everything sounded like a Yankee Candle or an air freshener. It was like Country Breeze.
Oh yes. That's good. That would have stuck.
So anyways, I know we could have partnered with a candle company for sure, but we wanted something that meant something to us and we wanted something that represented us. And so what we decided to do, Royal South, our friend Carly actually came up with this on my birthday. We were toying around with something, maybe Royal Southern or something like that. And she said, well, why don't you shorten it and do Royal South? Glenn is from the UK. We're both from the Southern parts.
I'm not actually royal.
Queen, but we wanted royal for the UK and then south for, you know, I'm from the south and
from Texas. Sarah's from Texas, so she's from the south.
So there you go.
Yeah, but for a while there, it overlaps where we had to put out music and we had some tours already booked. And so we went on tour as the Sarah Beth Trio because we brought a bass player along with us. And so the first real Royal South song was actually Sarah Beth's last single. It was called Something About It. But it's really Royal South. We just didn't have a name and we needed to release some music. So we put it out under Sarah Beth's name.
Now, obviously, folks listening can tell there's a mild accent that you have, Glenn. Tell us, where did country music come on for you? Where did the love for country music first come for you?
Well, I've never played anything other than country music. It's been country music my whole life. I've never been in a rock band or a pop band. It's always been country music. My dad had a country music band growing up. He was a wonderful singer. And so I grew up, you know, around my dad's band. He also was a radio presenter, a DJ, if you will, on our local radio station for Essex Radio. Every Sunday, he would do a few hours of playing country music. So, country music was very much a staple in our house. And it is true that country music isn't particularly huge in the UK, but it was really huge in our house. So, that's how I got into it. And then after my dad's band, I joined a couple of UK touring country bands. And then I started my own band. And when I realized I really couldn't go much further with country music in the UK, that's when I moved to Nashville.
Now, Sarah Beth, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to put you on the spot here. What was the worst name idea in your mind?
Oh gosh. I've like put that out of my head. Country Breeze really stood out because that is one of the worst ones. I'll have to look up. I'll have to go find. They're all in I brought like, you know, my stuff for the show in a bag and all of those napkins are still in the bag. There was something about a horse. there was something about a horse. I think they were inspired by these were the suggestions anyways. I think they were inspired because we were at the Wild Horse Saloon. And so they were all very stereotypical. You know, when you think of country music, it was like, okay, what's the most stereotypical words we could just lump together to come up with a band name, you know, like red bandanas. It was just crazy, weird stuff.
A little London whiskey for your listening pleasure, huh?
I know. Well, what's so sad is that Glenn was in a duo back when he first moved to town called London, Texas, which would have been perfect, but it had already been used.
We were getting so desperate for a name that we did actually talk about, resurrecting that name.
Resurrecting.
But I'm glad that we didn't.
I like the term resurrection. I like that. I like that. Now tell us a little bit about the latest single, the process behind the single, and also what it's like releasing music and marketing now in 2020.
Oh gosh. So it's funny. Glenn was talking about how the last song that I released just as a solo Sarah Beth was called Something About It. This song that You Weren't Made For Me, our new single, was actually recorded the same day that we recorded that song. Those songs were actually songs we were never going to release. I'm so glad that we did. 2020 kind of forced us to release the songs, because if you're not going into the studio, you don't have anything to put out to the fans. And obviously you can't go a year without putting out music. So You Weren't Made For Me, we wrote in this room. And we wrote it with our friend Beth Keeping, who is from the UK as well. She actually just reached out to us on Facebook. She was coming to Nashville. We had never met her in person. We might have had a couple of mutual friends, but she had heard of us through friends in the UK. And so reached out to us to write. And we wrote that song, which was actually her idea. She was just looking through, I think she was sitting here and she was looking through, you know, quotes, like breakup quotes and things that you see on those little memes. And she threw out a few different things and that song just kind of came to life.
Yeah. Another interesting thing about the song is, as Sarah Beth said, we never intended to actually release those songs. Those songs were recorded because we had a pseudo manager at the time who introduced us to Paul Worley. And those three songs, which were Something About It, You Weren't Made For Me. And what was the third one?
Another song, I Don't Want to Want You.
I Don't Want to Want You, which we have also released, yeah. Those three songs were literally recorded by us, just us. I produced it. And the whole point of that project was to impress Paul Worley.
Who is our producer, if you don't know who Paul Worley is.
Paul Worley's a legendary yes. producer. He has his name on hundreds of millions of albums. And so, yeah, that was the whole point of that project, was to impress him enough to where he might want to take the production reins. And thankfully, it did impress him enough and he did take us on. So,
which is a cool thing about the single as well. So You Weren't Made For Me has no electric instruments at all. There isn't even a drum kit on it. It's actually just percussion. The guy that was playing percussion had the craziest things to make those sounds. One of the things, he had like goat hooves to make certain noises.
Yeah. Yeah. Parts of cars, you know, something that looked like a, you know, a bumper or whatever. It was just crazy, crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. It was great. There's also no fake instruments, if you will. There's no drum machines. There's no samples of any kind. It's all real acoustic instruments with a real percussionist.
Yeah.
And Sarah Beth, I know you mentioned when you're writing, looking at memes and different quotes and stuff like that. Whenever you get in a writer's block in a session, what helps you to break that writer's block?
For me, I just clam up even more. It's terrible. Because there's nothing worse than when you're writing a song and you have nothing to say. You're just sitting there quiet and everyone else is throwing out good stuff. And you're just sitting there going, I don't feel like my name should even go on this, because I've said some ifs, ands, and buts that are little connector words maybe, but they're no big ideas. I think that's obviously a good thing. Sometimes it just helps looking at memes, I mean, is a good thing, but sometimes it helps to walk away. A lot of times I'll go and make another pot of coffee, or even the group as a whole, if we're not really getting anywhere, sometimes you can just stop writing and say, let's come back to this. Sometimes everyone says, hey, let's go to lunch.
Yeah.
And you walk away and then come back to it. And sometimes that means, if it's not coming easy, sometimes it means this isn't a great song. Other times it means that it's so good you want to make everything perfect.
Right. Yeah. And I think the most important thing to do in co-writing is to learn not to be afraid to blurt out something stupid.
Yes.
Right? You might think it's stupid yourself, but there might be a little thread of something cool there that when you blurt it out, it leads to somebody else embellishing that, making it bigger and better, and eventually you come up with something cool. But yeah, there's a lot of really stupid things get said in co-writing appointments. The most cliche, awful things that would never end up in a song, but ended up inspiring you to write something cool.
The amount of times that I haven't said something because I think it's dumb, and then 5 minutes later, someone says the exact same thing and everyone goes, that's awesome. And you think, I thought of that first, okay? I thought of that 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, you just got to not be afraid and be comfortable around your co-writers to where you just don't feel like you're stupid.
Well, you've mentioned a couple of different times about the how special that room is to your music, to your writing. And I do believe you have a guitar. I'm going to ask you if you would play a song for us. I want to hear something from that room, if that's possible.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, gosh. What do we want to play?
Completely unprepared. I haven't even tuned.
Oh, okay.
Do you want to play something we've released? That might be good.
Yeah, something we've released is always good.
Okay.
You want to play like a sassy song? Yeah. So this song, we didn't actually write this song. Raylan wrote this song though, and was kind enough to let us release it, or us record it and release it. And I love it. It's very sassy. And it's a song about going out and seeing your ex with their new person. So yes, she okay. said she wrote it about a shady person.
I think she said a shady bish.
Yes, I think she did.
Whatever a bish is. I think you can use your own imagination for that.
I'm just trying to be so politically correct there. If you want the exact words.
Yeah.
Anyways, this song is called Shh, Don't Say a Thing.
Version of me. Don't say a thing. Give it all in vain. Don't say a thing.
There you go. See, that sounded like you were completely prepared, Glenn.
Didn't get to warm up.
I know. Well, I've been drinking my green juice and my coffee, and I'm still not ready.
Now, what's what is the holiday season looking like for each of you guys this year?
Well, we're coming your direction. Crazy story. My grandma, I found out last night, she was asking me what I was doing. I've taken a detour, but it's still about family and we'll get back to where we're going. I'm from Texas. We're going to Texas to answer the question in case I forget. Glenn and I are both going to Texas to see my family. They live outside of Dallas, but my grandma was telling me about how she used to go to like a place that's like 20 minutes away from you guys. And that was where her grandma lived in Oklahoma.
Wow.
Yeah. So she was telling me about it. I wrote it down last night, but of course I forgot to open my messages. But yeah, she said she was at El Dorado.
El Dorado is about 10 miles from Altus.
Yeah. That's, she was talking about it last night. And then she said that she would like to go cause trouble. They would go across the border to Quanah, Texas.
Go stirring up trouble in Quanah.
Yes, but it was so funny. She was like, oh, I wonder where they're from. She's like, I used to go to El Dorado every summer. And I was like, okay, cool. So, but we're going to Texas for Christmas and we'll be there. We leave on Sunday and we get to stay for a week. So
that's cool. Now, what is, what are the goals and the plans that you guys have set in place for 2021?
It's so hard to know. So we were so excited because as independent artists, we finally got signed with a booking agent at the end of 2019, and we're still with our booking agency, but obviously that is such a weird thing because we've had so many shows this year, even towards the end of the year, you know, that got booked and then would get canceled with the ever changing ebb and flow. So we're hoping finally to get, we've got some small bar shows. We've kind of played the small town tour this year where, you know, we did a ton of small outdoor shows up in Wisconsin, which were a blast. And we're hoping to do more of that. We have a song, we've worked on some stuff, and Glenn has a home studio. And so he's been working really diligently to get music out that way we can have just more stuff to give to the fans. And so hopefully, all that being said, we're hoping to release music, play shows, and just continue like we would have if 2020 had never happened.
Yeah, 2021 is going to be pretty much what we've always been, which is really focusing on the fans rather than a lot of bands or singers. They come to Nashville and they don't do any shows. They very much focus on meeting the right people in town here, the right executives, trying to get a record deal, and then all of a sudden they have a record deal and then they go out and meet the fans. But we're doing it the old way. We're trying to build as big of a fan base as we possibly can. And if we get a record deal, like a major record deal out of that, wonderful. But if we don't, that's fine too. We've got an incredible little community happening already of wonderful fans, and it's getting bigger all the time. And that's all that we're going to focus on, is just making new friends and gaining more fans.
Now, how have the rights in 2020 been? Have they been darker to kind of show the mood of the world, or maybe have they been that much more bright, if you will?
It's been interesting. We've actually gone back this year. The songs that we've really written are songs that we went back and we maybe it half finished, or we didn't really like the song. I mean, we liked the song, but we just knew a verse was wrong, you know?
Yeah, needed a tweak.
It's funny. We started writing a song back in 2015 called Be a Light in the Dark. And it's obviously, it kind of speaks for itself, the name of the song. But it's funny, we lost power. We had a really bad storm come through Nashville. This is after the tornadoes, but we lost power for over maybe 48 hours. And so we ended up finishing Be a Light in the Dark and rewriting that to Candlelight, which was really crazy. But, you know, I feel like it's kind of been all over the place, but we've definitely written songs about, I feel like we've written a lot more slower. The songs we've been doing and writing this year have been kind of slower, which is weird for us. Normally they're up tempo, and we don't really do a lot of slow stuff, but we've kind of mellowed.
We haven't been writing as much either, and which sounds kind of crazy because we do have a lot more free time, a lot more time to be writing. But, you know, to be honest, this whole COVID thing has been very, very heavy on, well, the whole music industry and other industries too. Obviously, the hospitality industry and a bunch of other industries. It's been very, very hard, like mentally, like worried about, you know, how we're going to get by when we've got no shows. I mean, how are we going to make some money? And it really it affects, and it's affected me personally in a way where a lot of times I'm not feeling motivated to jump up and start writing a happy song, for sure.
You've written some good parody songs. He wrote a song, he started singing me a song that he's written about dad bods.
Yeah. One of these days I might release some of these parody songs.
We've definitely come up with a bunch of, well, Glenn especially has come up with a whole parody band and what the line of merchandise would be and what his album titles could be called. Yeah. None of which is serious. He's obviously very focused on Royal South.
That's awesome.
Just like a little fantasy in my head, I guess.
Now, guys, if folks want to find out more information about what's to come in 2021, plus the new single and everything else social media-wise, where's the best place to keep up?
Definitely. Well, you can see what it looks like when I create a Wix.com website at thisisroyalsouth.com. Now, I did pay...
It looks great.
I did pay the premium price where you don't get the ads.
Yeah,
that looks great. It really does. It looks really good.
It's come to the point where we really need to get a web person to actually start hosting it for us. But thisisroyalsouth.com was perfect for when we first started and we just needed something. We didn't have time to wait. I created it. It's still there. But This Is Royal South on Instagram and Facebook. And then... we are Royal South on Twitter because This Is Royal South was too many for Twitter. But
too many characters.
Basically, This Is Royal South will get you anywhere. Obviously, You Weren't Made For Me. You can hear on the radio, which is amazing.
Yes.
But you can find that everywhere. We're so thankful for your support on the single as well. Yeah.
And we're very excited about COVID coming to an end, you know, the vaccine and the end's in sight. And we have some awesome, awesome songs lined up. And we'll be back in the studio with Paul very soon. We were talking about January, but it might be later. People are still doing recording sessions in Nashville. They're being very safe about it, distanced with masks. But Paul is wanting to be extra careful, so he's been postponing us. But we will be back very soon, and I can't wait because we've got some killer material. Very exciting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, guys, it has been great to visit with you. Appreciate your time. I hope you guys have a Merry Christmas season and a Happy New Year as well.
Thanks. It was so good to see you.
All right, guys, our next guest on the podcast, Tay Bronson. I told him before we come on, and our listeners know this, there's no telling where we may go, but we'll get there eventually. Tay, thanks for taking the time to be on the show, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Now, Tay, tell me, how did country music come about in your life? I mean, that's not where you started out dreaming of, was it?
Yeah, you know, it kind of, I guess it goes back to you kind of listening on the AM radio, the old man, you know, back in the 70s, you fall in a hole and Willie and Waylon were playing on the airwaves somewhere. So I think that that was kind of my upbringing, and it was a big deal to watch Hee Haw as a kid growing up with the folks. And so all those entertainers, you know, it just kind of grounded me, and that is kind of where I'm from. And so the other stuff that, you know, came along later, I guess, you know, I discovered on my own and got into, I don't know, started buying LPs at about, you know, 10 years old or whenever I had enough money, you know, and started delving into rock and roll. And I think Foreigner Double Vision was the first rock album I actually bought. So, and then, you know, I probably digressed to the, from there. I think Kiss Dynasty was the next thing I got. So.
Now you were in the whole rock, the rock scene for how many years were you a part, playing bands and stuff?
So we formed at DePaul University. We were called Push Down and Turn, and we formed about 90, 91. And I think we took our last bow somewhere in 2003. And we were on the road. I mean, we were serious. We had a lot of great opportunity. I got to share the stage and shake hands and make friends with the big boys, and yeah, it was a lot of fun for a lot of years.
And how do you look at that time? How has that made you the artist that you are today? And how do you bring maybe some of that into your country personification, if you will?
Right. Yeah. Good question. Well, it gives whenever I'm going around, it's like, oh yeah, I've done this before. I've done this before. I've done this before. And then it came time to release, you know, releasing my album, and you know, now I'm dealing with Spotify and you know, Apple iTunes, and how do you get play here, blah blah blah. Oh, I don't know, I've never done this before. So in some senses I feel like I'm an old veteran, in other senses I feel like, man, I'm just as new as the next guy, because the whole game's kind of changed up since I was in it. How we do it. I mean, we're doing a podcast today, right? I mean, that stuff wasn't around. We'd have to actually get in the bus, drive to the radio station, you know, and then do that, and then still have time to get over to the gig and set up, play the show. So, yeah, in some ways, you know, I guess the old saying, you know, it's kind of like riding a bike. As far as that goes and playing shows and stuff, I'm like, yeah, I can do this. I've done this before. So
now, when was you obviously had a love for rock early, but when was it that the guitars and the vocals were something that you realized that you had yourself?
Well, I wrote for the, you know, I wrote for the band, and I would, for those who would listen, you know, the guys in the band, and then whenever I was, I don't know, at a party or whatever, or, you know, the after party, I'd pick up the guitar and just playing my tunes for someone who would listen. I mean, that's that's all I want to do. So, I just was like, hey, man, I guess my father passed away in 2016, and I wrote a song for him. It's on the album. It's called Willard's Song. And I was playing it for my sister, and she's like, well, you have to do that, you know, at the funeral. And I'm like, I don't know if I can. She's like, yeah, you're gonna. And so then I did, and then my family and all were like, you, what, we, more please. So that's kind of how it started, man. And I was like, you're right. I need to be writing songs and out singing. I just started doing it. So
now how this is some anyone that's a songwriter has had this question from me in the last couple of months. How has this year how is it showing in the music that you've written?
So yeah, man, I I'm glad you asked that question. I got one new song that I'm really proud of. It's called Bad Apple. And I got sent home during the lockdown for about 3 weeks. And I got that unemployment check. And then I got the stimulus check. And then I got the extra. And these checks were coming in the mail. And I was just sitting here noodling on the guitar. And I wasn't feeling real good about it. So I wrote a song called Bad Apple. The opening line is, I don't like to work habitually late, not too proud to take my hand out from the state.
That's a hook, isn't it?
I was like, I just started singing. I was like, okay, there's a line. Well, maybe I ought to write a song, and I called it Bad Apples. So it's about being kind of, I don't know, but a bad apple isn't really that bad, right? You can cut the bad part out, still eat part of it. So that's kind of what it's about. Like, maybe I'm not.
Take the good. Apple. Take the good part, right?
Right. Take the good with the bad. And, you know, don't judge a book by its cover. I don't.
Well, Tay, you're leaning on the guitar, and man, I can't wait to hear you strum something and show our listeners what everybody else is talking about as well.
Okay. Can you hear that? Okay.
Sounds good.
I'll play. This is kind of the song I wrote that broke the dam. This is called a Willard song. In 1980, I was 9 years old and had my own tackle box and fishing pole, toting it all over town. On my hubby. Not always turn that old back around, get her home long before the sun went down. I'd usually be waiting on him in the driveway. I'd say, hey dad, let's go fishing. I don't care if we're casting or what you can. Let's find a lake or maybe float the river. What I really want to do is spend some time together. Hey dad, got time to go fishing with me. He was a really hard-working man, just trying to make a living under Carter's plan. A big old house on a hill that everyone could see. And at the end of the day, when he was tired and spent, he grabbed me and the poles, man, and off we went. And sometimes he'd even leave his supper on the table. Hey dad, let's go fishing. I don't care if I'm casting or what you can. Let's find a lake or maybe float the river. What I really want to do is spend some time together. Hey dad, got time to go fishing with me. By the late 90s, he had more time to go, but I was playing the band, man, and we were on the road. I can't go fishing, Dad, we gotta cut another album. So he upped the ante till I couldn't say no. From the deep woods of Canada, way down to Mexico. That included a shore lunch with Frozen. My God, he does. Say, hey son, let's go fishing. I don't care if we're casting or what you can. Let's find a lake or maybe float the river. What I really want to do is spend some time together. It'd be nice to catch a fish or three, but it's really all about just you and me. Hey son, you got time to go fishing with me. Gone and oh how I miss him. Here's some more of my story if you take time to listen. Drop what you're doing right now and take your dead fishing. Just say, say, hey dad, let's go fishing. I don't care if you're casting or jigging. It's finally who made the float the river. What I really want to do is spend some time together. It'd be nice to catch a fish at 33 with the best damn fisherman in history. Hey son, you got time to go fishing with me. Hey dad, you know you'll always be fishing with me.
Now, that's good stuff, brother.
Thanks, man.
That's good stuff. Now, the songwriting stuff that you've done before and the songwriter that you are today, I mean, how much different is the songwriting based on the genre, too?
You know, it's the same formula, man. You know, A, B, A, C, A. I mean, it's pretty much the same formula. You know, when I was writing for the band, it was mid-late 90s, so I was probably trying to be a little more poetic than just relating. You know, you had to disguise things in a much deeper meaning because that's, I don't know.
You couldn't get away with saying the stuff you can today.
Yeah, that's true,
In a way, but then in a way you can't, too. So I guess there's trade-outs, right?
Yeah, right. And I think as a I think somehow as a younger writer that I was drawn to the alternative music because they weren't just laying it out there like that. But I think country music today, and I mean in some of the classics, I mean, is just so clever sometimes. Like, oh, that's really clever. and I like that. I like the cleverty, whatever you call it, you know, of songwriting, and to me it's fun, and that's what, you know, that last song I did wasn't necessarily so clever, but it was from the heart, which is the place that seems to be easiest for me to write. If I'm personally attached to the song, it seems to get written and seems to come out a lot quicker, you know, versus trying to write, put myself in somebody else's position or character's position, or what are we talking about? So anyway, but that's how a lot of my stuff comes from experiences that I've personally had. It's easier for me to write.
Now, what was it like in the heyday, being on the stage in front of the crazed fans? When you go back to those days in your mind, what was the what's the night that sticks out?
There's a couple. I spent the afternoon with the Counting Crows, and then got to open for them in a sold out 10,000 seat facility, Elliott Hall up at Purdue University in Lafayette. And the best part was my guitar player, Sam and I, we made friends with their guitar player and the original bass player. He's no longer with them. And so we were in their green room, which had we were drinking green bottles, so I know it either had to be Rolling Rock or Little Kings or something. And I mean, we sat in there all day. Everybody had an acoustic, and we sat in there and strung The Who and The Beatles and The Rolling Stones. We sat in there and sang all afternoon. It was like 2 or 3 hours. And all of a sudden, we're like, "Hey guys, we got to go on." So I'd made fast friends, and I played Ernie Ball. I played an Ernie Ball bass, and the County Crows bass player, he played Ernie Balls too, and he had a bunch of fretlesses. And so he came out, he walked down to the stage with me, and he introduced me to their guitar tech, and he goes, "Hey, if Tay wants to play any of these, you get get it to him. And I was like, oh my gosh, thanks so much, but I better dance with the girl that brought me.
you talk about the way the afternoon, that sounds like a Little King's afternoon.
It was a Little King's afternoon. Oh, there's another topper to this story. Okay. So it's just coincidentally, it happens over like alumni band weekend. And my sister was a member of the Purdue marching band. So she's like, oh, well, I'm going to go march at the game. And I guess they put them. So she's got on like her freaking, you know, band letter jacket, or I don't know what she's got on, or, and a saxophone on her. And the Crows bus is like, our bus is back there at the back of the facility. And there's literally this taped off road. And there's this line of girls waiting because they know that Adam Duritz is in the bus and they want to get a picture with Adam Duritz or whatever. So I come out. So I hear this knock at the back of the doors. And, you know, I got long hair and everything at the time. So I come out and all these, and these girls were, they're all yapping, yapping. So my sister goes up and knocks on the door. So I open up the door and then I see all these girls' focus are now on me and they get all quiet like, oh, who's that? You know? My sister with her saxophone around her neck and her Purdue band jacket on says, oh, don't worry, ladies. He's nobody. He's just my brother.
Oh, that's that, she's all about building your self-esteem, huh?
I mean, yeah, you know.
She could have gone, do you know who that is? That's what she should have done.
Yeah, don't you guys know who this is? Yeah, no. She's like, oh, don't worry, he's nobody. Don't waste your time on him.
That's awesome.
Don't waste your spot in line for the real rock star over there. Well, I mean,
that's, you know, awesome.
Well, only your brother or sister could do something like that. Right?
Well, Tay, if folks want to find out more information about upcoming music releases that you got, social media, obviously that's something that's changed a little bit since you were playing before.
Yeah, I got a Facebook page at Tay Bronson Music. You can find me on Instagram, Tay Bronson. On the World Wide Web, www.taybronson.com. I don't know. I'm threatening to open a TikTok account, but I don't.
Yeah, I threatened and I started one, and my wife said she's never going to do that. And well, she has taken over, and she's the TikTok queen now in the house. So
is she?
Yeah.
Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah, my daughter seems to be, you know, making dance routines all the time. So. I'm just learning my way around it.
well, I, if you get on TikTok, I'll be a follower and, I'll laugh right along with you.
All right.
Well, Tay, thank you for your time today, brother.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
Our next guest, comedian and actor, Michael Colliar, got a brand new movie on BET that premieres this Wednesday. Dolph, Michael, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Cameron. It's great to be here. Thank you. God bless you and good morning.
That's right. And exciting, you actually are one of the few that can say you've got a new movie out in 2020, right?
Ain't that deep? In 2020, when ain't nobody even shooting films, I have not just a big film, but I am the lead. Now, Cameron, I've been in the business 34 years. This is the first time I am number one on the call sheet in a major motion picture, you know, so it's very exciting.
And working with Tressa and the job that they did getting ready for all of the COVID-19, all of the safeguards, if you will. I mean, how proud are you of the job that was done there and having to do things completely differently this time around?
Oh, my God. First of all, don't get me started about Tressa. Smallwood, who is a genius, who produced this. And yes, they looked at, after all of the COVID compliances, you know, we had to take the COVID test and show up with that test in our hand that was current. They tested us every day by temperature, and then they tested every 3 days by taking a little blood from us, and they was on top of it. You couldn't come on that set if you wasn't COVID compliant. So they handled it well, but even deeper than that, they have such integrity. They have such light. I mean, we never started a shoot without doing prayer, you know? So they dealt with everything with positivity and light. And a job that was actually, I'll be honest, daunting and frightening to me, because I've never been the lead. I've been in the business 34 years. And this is the first time I'm actually the lead in a movie. So I was a little nervous. I'm trying to make sure I'm getting it right. But everybody on that staff, I'm talking about craft services to assistant director, was supporting you, giving you thumbs up, giving you love, making sure that your job went smooth. And when I say smooth, oh my God, this movie looks so good. The story is so good. Also written by a black woman. Let me just say that. First of all, Tressa Smallwood, black woman, is the producer. The writer, Tiffany Yancey, who wrote an amazing story, is the writer. And while I'm on it, let me just remind the world that a black woman is now vice president of the United States. I just want to get that out there right now while I can. So it's a beautiful movie, an awesome story about a man who, when he was younger, played with the ladies to the point where he broke the wrong woman's heart. And she put a spell on him, you know. Now, my wife is played by A.J. Johnson, who's an awesome actress, and people will remember her from Baby Boy. She played Tyrese's mom, and she's also in the original House Party. I was in House Party 3, which I still think is the best one. But anyway, she was in House Party, and she's just wonderful. She taught me so much as an actor on that set. She was so patient and cool with me. And then Lisa Ray plays the voodoo witch who put the spell on me because of what I did to her, okay? So then I have a daughter who just turned 30 named, it was played by Mariam Bashir from the series The Shy. I got to break that spell called Here Come This Fool named Country Wayne. You know Country Wayne?
I do.
Country Wayne is retarded. He is the funniest person ever. This dude can say peanut butter and it's funny. He can say curtain rod. And it's funny. He is trying to get his hands on my daughter who's under this spell. So I got to break the spell. And, you know, the story is really about karma. It's about how you treat people, man. If you don't treat them right, then the universe is going to come and bite you in the tuchus. So I got to break. And the whole time I think I'm trying to save my daughter, I really come to the realization that I'm really saving myself, brother. It's a cold story. It's funny. You're going to fall on the floor laughing. It's called Holiday Heartbreak. And I am honored to be part of it. Lonnie B is in it. You know, Joe Claire is in it. All these great artists are in this film, and it's just, it's off the chain. It's off the chain. It's
well,
off the chain.
Well, Michael, the only question I got to ask you is, I can't really tell if you're excited or proud of this project.
Well, just a little bit. Just a little bit. Let me tell you something. I am throwing a premiere at my home, okay? But it's COVID, so can't nobody come. It's just going to be me and my woman, just me and my wife. But my wife has bought me a red carpet remnant. Okay, so we're going to put the remnant out on the sidewalk. I'm going to get in the car and drive around the block. Now, when I come back, we pass out flyers to the neighbors. I want them to be outside with their camera phones taking pictures. They're going to be paparazzi. And then I'm going to walk up to the door, and I'm going to close it on them because they can't come in my house now. Now, where COVID's going on, I don't play with COVID. If you cough on this phone, I will hang up on you. I don't play with COVID. No.
Now, Michael, one of the things I love to talk, and I know that you're talking, sharing a story of hope and happiness and getting over some ugliness in your past. And what has 2020, as you've looked inward a little bit, what have you learned about Michael this year?
Well, you know, I learned that it's about a reset. You know, life is really about a reset. I think a lot of people are blown away by COVID because they think it's the end of the world. People think, oh, my Lord, God has left the room. God ain't never left the building. This reset, it taught me that I have to look at things differently. I have to look at my health differently, you know, because if I build my immune system, I could beat COVID. So I'm doing Echinacea and Golden Seal every day. Black seed oil, ginger root tea. I've drank so much ginger root tea, I peed a cup of ginger ale day before yesterday. I'm washing my hands 49 times. Me and my wife wear a mask everywhere. We wear a mask to bed. Sometimes we don't know who we're sleeping with. So I learned that you got to adjust to whatever is going on. You got to adjust your finances. If you ain't been keeping up with your money, people nervous right now. A lot of folks who thought they'd never be out of work are out of work. March 13th, I lost over 40 jobs. On one day, they closed every comedy club in the country. And I was booked somewhere every weekend for 4 months. Boom, gone, just like that. So what am I going to do, panic? No, it's not about what happens to you. What's important is how do you deal with it. Some people say, oh, man, God is mad at us. He turned our back. God has never left the room. God is always there. He's never left us. It's just how do we access him and utilize his greatness? So what I ain't doing, I ain't panicking. Instead, I started my own morning show. So I do a morning show every morning called the Michael Collier Morning Show. Anybody could go to it. You don't have to go during the morning. You go anytime, day or night, and put in the Michael Collier Morning Show on YouTube and see our show. We did that show every day, 7 days a week since March 13th, because we wanted to have a place where people can come and laugh and pray, you know, because people are scared right now. People are so nervous. They're hurt more now by fear and stress than they are the actual virus. So we're here to remind you that it's all good because it's all God. He's still in the place. Don't lose your faith right now. Stand tall. Because, like, look at me. It's the middle of a pandemic. Ain't nobody shooting film nowhere. And out the blue, I don't just get a movie. I get the starring part. And Tressa didn't even make me audition. She called and gave me this part. You know, and I'm telling you, I was terrified because I've never had the lead. I've never had to be responsible for carrying the movie. But her set was run so well, so professionally. They started every day with prayer, and they lifted you up with positivity all day long, and they worked with you. They made something that was daunting and scary actually fun and wonderful. And you'll see the proof is in the pudding. When you see this movie, it's funny, it's fast-paced, it's there's love involved. And right now, you want to laugh. Laughter right. comes from God. Laughter is healing. If you can laugh through a thing, you can get through a thing. And right now, when we got this pandemic, when we got unemployment at all-time high, racism the highest it's ever been, some orange-haired fool is pretending to be president, when we got all this stuff going on, if you can't laugh, you're going to mess around and punch somebody in their face. So I feel like I'm an ambassador. I'm the ambassador of Quam. I'm out here making people laugh and lifting up spirits, you know. So actually, I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be. What I learned? I learned that you can make magic out of all of it because you're standing with a king. You're standing with God, you know. And as long as you're with God, one with God is the majority. You can make it work. You have to look at it the right way. And I always look at it with positivity. I'm always looking at the light. You know,
that's right. Yep. Well, Michael, look forward to the movie Holiday Heartbreak on BET tomorrow. Appreciate your time. And hopefully we can catch up in the new year, my friend.
Can I just tell people where to find me?
Yeah, go ahead.
You can find me on Instagram under Michael Collier, C-O-L-Y-A-R. Or you can go to my very sexy webpage, therealmichaelcollier.com. Or you can come see my morning show on YouTube at The Michael Collier Morning Show. And God bless everybody. I hope y'all have a wonderful, wonderful holiday. It's still good. It's all good because it's all God. Thank you.
Actually, our podcast yesterday, the singer-songwriter Bernie Nelson actually spoke of these guys very highly. So, man, we did all we could. 24-hour turnaround. We got them. Well, actually, this was planned before, but we should have just played along with that. We got Kid Fo on the line with us. I'll be like, man, we put a rush order. Got them on. Well, first off, guys, I want to give you guys an opportunity to kind of introduce yourselves. And I know we're connecting through San Antonio this afternoon. I'm so used to morning.
Oh, yeah, don't worry, man. We've been at it since the morning, so no worries.
What
is state of mind,
man?
It's a state of mind.
Well, let you introduce each of you first.
Yeah, man. My name's Rico Gonzalez. I play fiddle.
My name's Ross. I play bass.
And Dan, drummer. I'm Jake. I play guitar.
And we're Kimbo.
now, how did you guys first get together in the first place? Where did you guys first connect?
Well, what happened was...
Have you ever heard of Farmers Only?
You didn't have to be lonely.
Yes, you don't have to be lonely.
We
met up north. I moved to Michigan when I got married, and that's where I met Dan. And Dan and I played in a band together, and Jake and Ross played in a band together. And it just so happened that we played the same circuit around. We knew each other. So long story short, we put a side project together, and then it became kind of overwhelmingly full time. Kind of rushing the timeline here, but that's how Kimfo kind of came about. I mean, you guys know
that. Yeah. I mean, we upon the inception, we wanted to do Texas style music with some red dirt, and up there it was kind of unheard of, So we tried it out, and we had overwhelmingly a positive, reception.
So it's heard of now.
There's like an underground following.
And to see the following, obviously, like I said, it wasn't so much up north, but to have that following and the Texas Texas whole genre, if you will, how cool is that to be a part of?
It's overwhelming, dude. It's overwhelming, man.
That's why we moved here.
Yeah.
Honestly, yeah. I mean, we toured here four times, but I mean, really, on our first time, I was like, man, what is this place? And why haven't I been here my whole life? The music scene here is something really special, it really, really is, and we appreciate it, we're very appreciative that they've embraced us.
The whole fact of it's super special from, we've all played, we've done the Nashville thing, we've done kind of all over the country, but in Texas, it's artists support each other, man.
Community,
no matter who you are, if you're this high on the ladder to this, just starting out, I mean, it's so cool how we support each other. I mean, it's a community, man, and it's unlike any other. I hate to say it, but I in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. And the fans here are different. They listen to music. They care about the music. It's just different from region to region. But I think Texas, is something very, very special.
Yeah, I lived in Indiana for 10 years, and that's where my wife is from. Oh. And so whenever I moved back here in radio, we came down and I interviewed for the job. We were here for a couple of days, and on our drive back to Indiana, after accepting the job, she was like, "So is everybody that nice just because they know you? Because this is my hometown." And I was like, 95% of the people didn't know me. That's just how people are. And I'm sure you guys can have a lot of firsthand stories of that here in Mid-America as well.
The first time we played Luckenbach was with our buddy now Fowler, Kevin Fowler, and it was an honor because he was a big influence on our sound when we first put this band together. We were like a Kevin Fowler club. Every song,
At one point when we had like
12 covers. Oh, I don't even know. But it was so, you can imagine the fangirling that was going on. But we got the show with him. And the thing is, like you're talking about community, Kevin, when we first met him, he invited us on his bus after the show. He gave us chili that he made, with potatoes. He cooks his chili with potatoes.
Potatoes? I've never heard of that in my life.
The whole thing is that he was super nice, man.
It was kind of funny. He was like, "Man, what is this?" I'm like, "When Kevin Fowler offers you chili potatoes, you take it and you eat it."
Talk a little bit about the new single. We talked about Bernie writing this one, and to be approached and to have the opportunity, I guess I should say, to cut a Bernie track. I mean, how cool is that for you?
Yeah, well, Bernie really took us under his wing early on in the process, and so we've actually been writing with him and poaching his songs for a long time now. First two people Bernie songs too. Yeah, so we just we really like his style of writing. It really fits what we're doing,
And we did, obviously we take, you know, songs that he'd already written, we take them and alter them and make them our own, make them suit our sound.
With the Kento sauce on it.
But just his style of writing is right in our wheelhouse for sure.
So what is the Kenvo sauce? What is that? Can you order it online? Is it in a bottle?
I was hoping you were going to go there.
Getting ready to live.
Oh man! You know,
someone up north coined it as industrial dirt because we were mixing red dirt with Texas country with Midwestern grit, and it just came out a little bit different sound. It's edgy, maybe in a vein of red dirt, but it also has fiddle and some from traditional Texas country mixed in with the grit. So it's just a different.
Very well put.
I'm excited. I see a couple of guitars in front of me. I want to hear what the sauce is all about.
Better get a bib, buddy.
can you hear us well enough? Yes, you think it'd be good?
I can hear you real well.
All right. Well.
All right.
Let's do our first single, man. It's a little honky tonk song. You ever heard of a tear in your beer, right?
Yeah, a tear in your beer.
You need a little bit of something stronger, man. A little tear in your whiskey.
All right, ready? Here we go. 3, 4.
Drinking teardrops on the rocks with the whistle chaser. Tell the band to play her one gin and song. Drinking teardrops on the rocks with the whistle chaser. She'll get over him if it takes her on and on. Oh, come on, boys. But her makeup, it didn't make it past the first one. Oh, as the teardrops kept falling from her eyes, yeah. Come on, bartender, bring another, make it a good one. Oh, cause she'll throw it back on, they begin to cry. She's drinking teardrops on the rocks with the whiskey chaser. Tell the band to play her one more gin song. Drinking teardrops on the rocks with the whiskey chaser. She'll get over him if it takes her all night long. Turn around, boys, yeah. That's right, Dave. One by one, those cowboys sat beside her. And the wife's gonna dance. Try to take her home. She's a beauty, hey, but she's a looker. Now she's hurting. Oh, and all she wants is just to be left alone. She's drinking teardrops on the rocks with the whiskey chaser. Tell the band to play her one more gin song. Drinking teardrops on the rocks with the whiskey chaser. She'll get over him if it takes her all night long. Oh, here's Jake Black. Come on, Jake. Yeah. Yeah. Hell yeah, man. Come on, buddy. Chaser, dumb bear, play her one more cheating song. Drinking teardrops on the rocks whip-a-whistle chaser. But you get over him and it takes all night long. But you get over him and it takes all night long. But you get over him and it takes all night long.
So I can order a case of that sauce duty free, right?
Yes. Yes.
Just
watch the grit. With a skeleton on it because it's a little spicy. It'll make you sweat.
It goes very well with a brisket.
Yes.
Now, awesome, now man. I got to ask you, fiddle. Where did the love for the fiddle? Who inspired that for you?
Man, I gotta thank my parents, man. They got me playing fiddle or violin, I should say, at a very young age. And I grew up playing classical, actually. And I give it all to them, man. They kept me going. You know how many times I wanted to quit this thing and like go play football or go play soccer or go do something else that was cooler, you know, in school. And there's a couple times I think I actually broke a fiddle one time. And my mom, I was really wanting this to get under their skin. And they, you know, they did. They took me right out and got me another one of that. I think that was more punishment for me.
that'll teach you.
Yeah, but I'm so thankful for them, man. I mean, because of them, I got to travel the world. I know, like I said, I majored in it classically, so playing mariachi with my family was a big deal, and then traveling to the symphony, and then it wasn't until now, about 6 or 7 years now, that I actually jumped into country music because of Dan, man, here, and these boys, man, they really introduced me. And trust me, we got our stories of me still figuring out who's who in the country.
Yeah, we love to play the game. Hey, Rico, who's this?
There's a lot of education going on. Hey, we're not talking about Ben Skill today.
Hey, I've got one for you, too, then. I whenever I first got into country radio, I'd been in pop radio, still am in pop radio, but was in pop radio for like 15 years. Got into country radio. We got added to Music Row. So we were like, okay, we got to get to Nashville the next time there's something coming up. 2 weeks later, CMA Fest. Well, a buddy of mine takes me and he says, hey, I'm going to be gone. I'll give you my condo for the week. So I go, well, obviously I didn't want to smoke in his condo. So I go out and I have a smoke break that morning after the shower before I get ready to head downtown. This guy stops and starts talking to me. Well, I shoot the bull with this guy for like 15 minutes, like three smokes I had with him, just shooting the bull, had no clue who he was. And so went the whole day, never thought a thing about it. Watching the CMT Awards show that night, they say, well, leading us into the break, here's Brantley Gilbert. And they show him, I'm like, he lives in this building. I was like, I had no idea that's what he looks like. So, I shared a good visit with Brantley Gilbert, and neither him nor I even realized it. So there you go.
I don't have any of that.
He sat next to Vince Gill, and he was like, so are you the band?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He was the nicest guy.
That's awesome.
You sing or anything? What do you do?
Have you ever heard of the Eagles?
Anything I might have heard of?
Yeah, exactly. That's awesome. It's all right. Hey, you guys stick together, man. And here's the deal, though. We're trying to get better. I'm trying to get better.
Yeah, he's getting better. Yeah.
That's right. Well, hey, you guys got a good start going, and if folks want to keep up with the music, upcoming tunes, upcoming tour dates, social media, all of that stuff, where's the best place to keep up with you?
I think we mentioned it earlier, but like Farmers Only. No, kinfo.com, KINFAUX.com, and you can smash the tour. The button, you can see where we're playing, you can see the music and videos, and it takes you a link to our Vivo channel on YouTube. You know, we just launched for our new single that's out, Honky Tonk in Heaven. We launched a lyric video on Thanksgiving. So if you know, take enough tequila shots and you want to sit back and do some karaoke with Kimfo, you can go to that. Kimfo Honky Tonk in Heaven on YouTube. So anyway, brother, we're on Twitter, Instagram, and our big one's Facebook. A lot of followers follow us on Facebook. And to be honest, we're super lucky. We had a couple of our
I don't know, I hate saying super fans, I don't know what you want to call them, but really close people to us that took it upon themselves and they started a fan club, man, and a fan official fan page. So if you want to get some inside news on that, you can join the band page and the official fan page too.
Well, your mobile device just agreed with it being the super fan. You said super fan, and you're like, I'm not sure. And it said, ding.
I apologize.
Yeah. Alexa said, don't mess with me. well, guys, it has been great to visit with you today. I thoroughly enjoyed my time. Hopefully, once things open up a bit, we can catch up face to face and do something again in the new year. Your phone liked it again.
I'm sorry. I put my phone on silent, but apparently my computer still wants to talk. So.
Yeah, see?
Yes, I do. Love you, Cameron. Thanks so much, man.
That's good stuff. Thanks again for joining us for this 70th episode of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. If you ever have a comment, question, anything else you'd like to know, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, all at GQ with Cam. If you'd like to help out in the funding for this podcast, feel free to click the support tab and follow the instructions. If you have a special guest idea, you can email me, gqwithcam@gmail.com. Again, thanks to Brandon Allen for pinning and playing this tune for us each and every episode. We're going to let him play us out. Hope you guys have a great rest of your Tuesday. Join me for episode 71 coming up tomorrow.